Here we go. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Bog, and I am sorry for being ridiculously late. Real quick before we get started, let me tell you about my day here. First of all, it's just like one of the worst days ever. You know, work was lousy. You know, but I was really excited because my wife found a really awesome deal for one of them, you know, standalone, the stand by itself air conditioners that sits in the middle of your room. Because up here in my studio, which is my attic, my studio, I got these little stupid windows that only these little piece of crap air conditioners can fit in, and they don't really work, and it's getting blazing hot, so it's turning into an oven up here, literally. So I was real excited about this little standalone air conditioner. I had money. I was going to give them some extra money just because of the deal, how great it was. Well, I drive an hour and 20 minutes to this place, which it's the traffic was so ridiculous. It's like a half-hour drive. It took me like an hour and 20 minutes to get to this goofy place. I had to wait for the goofball to get there. They get there, they're these two freaking meth heads, missing teeth, like weirdos, and they roll up, they take me to their storage unit that they wouldn't tell me where it was in the first place. I had to, you know, find the location 10 minutes before I was supposed to go buy this air conditioner. It's an air conditioner. It's not a, you know, it's not a briefcase full of cocaine. You know, it's an air conditioner. And we had to do this secret squirrel agent thing like we're the mafia. So I go there. It turns out they don't even have it. They sold it 2 weeks ago and they're just acting dumb. So they lied to me, lied to my wife to lure me into this stupid freaking place to go buy a bunch of stuff that I don't want. See, the guy's trying to sell me speakers for my car and like a broken stove and a bunch of crap. Never buy. You know, if you look at somebody and they look like a member of the family from The Hills Have Eyes, don't do business with them because they're probably really stupid. Okay, I just had to get that off my chest. I'm sorry, that's not pagan stuff, but I feel better now. Okay, before we get started with the Bog, let's talk about our sponsors here. My homegirl, Miss Hannah, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Yo, this is for us, by us, real organic ingredients, homegrown from America, Europe. It's designed for us, by us. Opt out of the consumerist garbage, the entire network of multinational corporations that hate your guts, sell you poison that trashes your body. Go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com and pick some of this stuff. There's beard oil. I'm using beard oil right now. I got this face toner stuff on. Lotion makes. I'm telling you, I feel like a new man. It's wonderful. My wife uses it. My mom uses it. People are talking. My boy Dr. G. Remember Dr. G a few episodes ago? Him and his wife are now using it. He's a doctor. So it's really, really, really great stuff. TraditionalApothecary.BigCartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. And also, I'm sure he has a website yet, but I have to give him a shout for this. As soon as his website goes up, I'm going to give him some shouts. My buddy Rob Stam, the folkish cop, made this horn for me. Made this horn, homemade. You know, it's got the wax lining, you know, custom design. It's got my kindred's symbol here, the Penfolk, you know, Allemannic sun wheel with the keystone for Pennsylvania. If it ain't Dutch, it ain't much. You got the Othala rune. Like, look at this. Look at this bad boy. Really, really reasonably priced. This guy sells horns, like, that are just, this is like, go to, like, Grimfrost is like, you know, $300. This was about $100. This is really great stuff. I'm not sure he's got a website yet, but I just want to show off my really badass horn. And one more quick plug, and then we'll get right into it. Set this down here. Make sure you get a copy of the Otis book. I'm telling you guys. This is if you are folk-minded, this has to be on your bookshelf. All right, without further ado, let's get started. Mr. Griff, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Well, it doesn't sound like my day was quite as bad as yours, so
it's lousy.
On that score, I'm doing better.
Oh man. Yeah.
I did not get scammed by any meth heads today, so I guess I'm ahead of the game.
Yeah. I had to pay for that. I took the turnpike because the traffic was so bad. Oh my God. So I had to pay for the turnpike. I lost money going to see these goofball meth heads. I hope they sell nothing. In fact, I hope their storage unit catches fire and they lose everything. I don't condone anybody actually like committing arson, but I like if it accidentally caught fire because one of their goofy appliances in there short circuited because they're all broken and cut up and probably stripped of copper, then I mean, I mean, I wouldn't be sad at all. In fact, you know, I would laugh. I would laugh at their stupid place getting burnt down.
That's a great way to open this discussion.
Yeah. Okay. So, but speaking of, we're going to talk about fate tonight. Mr. Grimm was getting ripped off by meth heads in the cards for me this evening. Did the Norns weave that into the web of weird?
I suspect so. I mean, I'm not sure I can see a greater purpose in it, but perhaps we'll figure it out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So,
but
go ahead.
Well, I would just say, you know, fate is a really important concept because it's probably the biggest difference, at least to my mind, it's probably the biggest difference in, you know, the worldview that we grew up with, this worldview of rationalism that comes from liberalism, that I would say comes from Protestantism and so on. Sure. But it's, you know, and when people go and they read something like the Norse sagas from Iceland or something, the biggest difference in the character is just they have this mentality that they really do truly believe in, you know, the old Germanic concept of fate, which it's really, I mean, I now believe it, but it's a completely different bridge and worldview to believe it now versus how I thought before I became a real pagan.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you get into the ideas of fate, you kind of get into there's a few different schools of thought, which we're gonna get into today. You have stuff like, you have determinism, you have existential determinism, you have predeterminism, you have predeterminism, then you have, I believe they call it predestination, and then you have what's called the libertarian or free will ideology, which you just mentioned about the Protestant view. The free will idea comes 100% from Martin Luther. Martin Luther started it, and then it later on became more prevalent in the later Protestant thinkers. And it's 100% part of, like, you know, I guess you could say Protestant moralism or Christian materialism.
Well, I mean, you know, it's also tied to their concept, you know, their way they have to deal with the problem of evil and stuff, that, you know, they claim an omnipotent God that created the world and everything. And the only way they can explain evil and bad is they have to introduce this concept of free will.
Okay. Let's flesh that out a little bit for me. How in their worldview does the mechanism of free will work? How does it work in there? Because it kind of sounds a little bit, you know, weird to me, or somebody that's listening that thinks, you know, well, Christians believe that there is this omnipresent, overarching God that oversees everything, like the monolithic, monotheistic God. He's in charge of everything, created the universe, he's the boss of everything. How is it, if he's that all-powerful, why would man have free will? Wouldn't, like, predestination, having your... If he knows everything and does everything, he's in control of everything, he is everything, why wouldn't he have control over like, your fate or your destiny?
Well, I mean, it's really a complex problem. And, you know, as you said, predestination is another, you know, it comes from Calvinists, from John Calvin, that's their answer to it is, oh, well, yeah, of course, God planned it all and we have a predestined fate and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's far more typical in other Protestant schools and has come into secular life and our modern, quote unquote, rationalist and super materialist worldview that we have this free will, because, of course, if we didn't, then everything would have to be deterministic because it's created by this one God who has everything planned. So if we're going to even be tested by Satan or anything, well, the only way it could be is if we have some free will and independent agency and can act completely alien from, you know, how we're grown, what our genetics are, what our blood is, where we come from, our language. Apparently that all doesn't matter, and we're just free agents that exist floating in space on some level.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, there have been some saints throughout history, like Thomas Assisi, I believe, who actually introduced a lot of, like, animist stuff, who spoke about how he actually had a very complex view of fate, which was sort of kind of in line with how we view fate. So under within the Christian lexicon of, you know, ideologies, within their encyclopedia of beliefs in time and fate and like all these things. They're really across the spectrum. Would you agree?
I would, and I would even argue that those kinds of views and even Calvin's predestination, you know, and that the Calvinists and the Puritans and Presbyterians and all believe, you know, the whole predestination, they're the elect that are people that are basically born, that are going destined to go to heaven, and basically everyone else is fucked no matter what they do. But I would argue that this is basically a subverted form of our normal, healthy, you know, our normal healthy mentality and instinct is to have the worldview that we were made for, which is a worldview that knows and sees fate.
Yeah, real quick, Griff, they're saying that they're hearing your beard scratch against the microphone.
I'm sorry. I'll try and minimize it. I know it's a problem. I need to get a better mic.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm sorry. Continue.
No, I was just saying that the... I think that it's basically people that have this instinct towards fate because it's our native European worldview that fate is basically the force that governs the world in some sense. And in a basic, you know, if you're just working from the Bible, there's no fate in there at all. So you have to introduce this foreign concept of providence and blah, 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 which is basically just, I think it's just a subverted, twisted form of a healthy impulse that is from our nature to see the world this way, that fate governs things.
Yeah. Man, how big is your beard?
It's not that big. I mean, I don't know. I haven't shaved it or trimmed it in maybe 2 months.
Dang. Because it's like, I can hear that you're moving off the mic and it's still, you can hear, still hear the scratching. Your beard's got to be like sticking out 4 inches.
Not quite that long, maybe 2 inches.
Okay, so, you know, it's really fascinating digging into this, and it's also really, really controversial, to believe it or not. I think this might be one of the most hot button issues talked about in the, you know, in the heathen sphere. Is the
Dave, hot button issues are kind of our thing so far. So,
yeah, it sort of is. But we had one last week. Now this week we got another one. So we're ruffling all the feathers. But it's okay. It's good. It's good. If your feathers are getting ruffled, you know, and that's good for you. It means that you're hearing new ideas that are opposed to your worldview, and that means that it's time to reflect and to make sure that what you're hearing is not disproving what your worldview is. Yeah. You know, and that's something that when I get mad, like if I hear something that's unless it's just like something that's absolutely ridiculous, it's complete garbage. When I hear something, I don't get mad about it. I automatically think, okay, was this right? Is this true? Well, what are the details? What are the definitions? What is this coming from? So, a lot of times when I say something, I see somebody that gets emotional. I know it's because they don't have an argument. I know it's because they can't handle it, because it's, you know, that tells me that there's somebody that prioritizes comfort. You know, they're a materialist and they're not quite, you know, onto the next level of awakening quite yet. So you guys listening, if get rid of that, if there's something that like triggers you, just take a step back, be like, okay, why is this triggering me? Why does this upset me? Is it because this thing is really confronting my worldview, my established narratives that I have inside? One of the biggest important parts of this is why I think debate is so important and empiricism is so important. At least I'm not Stephen Molyneux over here, but you know, I try my best with what I have and what I'm working with to be as empirical as possible and kind of reach into the depths of myself and try to pick apart and poke holes in my own belief system, because that's how you grow and that's how you become more spiritually awakened. And because what is the highest ideal of spirituality? It's truth. But I digress. Before we get too crazy talking about that stuff, I go on a filibuster about something that's off topic. When it comes to fate, like I said, it's very, very controversial. And the reason that it's controversial is because people have been so ingrained with this Protestant morality about free will. They feel like it's getting taken from them. You know, it's like, oh, you're taking my little choices. You're taking my choices away. You know, it's almost like a little kid or something. They have an emotional reaction, when you, but when you, if you don't say that word and you just kind of like break it down, like, hey, do you think that the events in the past kind of shape what happens in the future? Like, oh yeah, I kind of believe that. So it's like when you dig into it, nobody really like logically can get on with free will, because it's like, you know, reality is deterministic. You know what I mean? If I pick up a rock and I throw it, that rock is going to have that trajectory going that way. That was predetermined. That right there proves that determinism, you know, reality is determined. So, Griff, what do you think about what I just said there?
I agree with most of it. I'm not sure I would say that reality is purely deterministic. I think even that is somewhat of a false dichotomy from free will, and even falls into the same kind of Protestant trap. I guess I tend to view it more as, you know, it's free will. You're kind of, the idea of free will, you're off kind of in space. You can go any fucking direction you want and build and do and be whatever. I mean, you know, this taken to its logical conclusion means you can be a tranny or whatever. You can change who you are. You can even be a transracial or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the logical conclusion of free will. But I think that I tend to view it more as like, say, the branches of a tree, or, you know, going down the road, you know, that they're things are determined to some extent, but you will along the way in your life make choices that kind of choose different roads that are conditioned, but also determined, but not purely deterministic, I guess I would say. I don't know. Maybe my view is hard to explain.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. What you're describing is, from what I understand, is defined as existential determinism. So it's like we fall in kind of like a weird gray area where we're not like 100% determinist, but we are kind of a little bit off the beat. We're like kind of in the gray area between fatalism and determinism with some nuance. You know what I mean? So it's like we kind of,
yeah.
The Odinic view is a little bit more nuanced than just one of these straight up definitions.
Well, and I even that brings up another good point that, as you say, that's, to me, at least, that's the Odinic view, and as I understand it, that was our native view in Northern Europe, whether you're Celtic, Germanic, Baltic, whatever, Slavic, you know, or the original Italics, etc. And then in the later, you know, Greco-Roman sources, you see this sort of very decadent fatalism that is completely deterministic, which is not, at least, is not our native view of fate, I don't think.
So, with your beard removed from your microphone, what? Could you explain to me the difference between fatalism and determinism?
I mean, I'm not sure I can, honestly. I mean, at least to me, I've filed them both away. At least when we look at it in the Greco-Roman conception of fatalism, it is very deterministic. It's the way that, say, the Stoics look at fate, that, okay, I can't control anything, I'm just going to be along for the ride kind of mentality. It's a very, I don't know, even to be in a meme sort of way, even I would maybe even call it a cope.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you compare that to say that the way that you see the active heroes in the Norse sagas, or even people in, say, the Irish myths, the way that they face fate, you know, they face it as an actor. Even if they know they're fated to die, they still act and go on, you know, but this kind of the Stoic take, and as I said, at least most of the Greco-Roman sources, at least everything post, say, Homer and Hesiod, the take on fate is more, it's sort of this just, okay, I'm along, the world is doomed, everything sucks. And it's basically the same mentality that prepares you for savior religion, really, but that's kind of off topic.
Yeah. Fatalism and determinism are kind of different, because fatalism is the idea that you are destined for a specific fate. However, determinism is the idea that your what is going on in the present is determined by things in the past. For example, like I use this analogy a lot. Say you're driving, you know, in your car, you're driving home from work, you hit a pothole, you wreck, you crash, and you die. Why did that happen? Well, by your own free will, did you get in your car and get in drive down the road and leave? No, it wasn't by your own free will. The reason that there was a pothole is because there was, you know, two punk jerk off kids that were like hucking giant rocks into the street, busting up the concrete. And the reason that those kids were out there was because they're, you know, and the one kid's mom is a real drunk bitch. And the reason that she's a drunk bitch is because she had a husband that was banging the babysitter. And the reason that the husband was banging the babysitter is because that dude's dad was also a philanderer, whose dad was a philanderer. And the reason that you left work early to go during that time was because, you know, your boss showed up early and cut you. The reason that he showed up early was because, you know, he woke up early and he had a good day. And the reason that he woke up early and had a good day is because, his family came to visit and he had a wonderful time and he had a great, you know, it all ties together and all weaves together to create this one reality that happened. That's a general basic understanding of determinism that, you know, everything is like the web of weird. Everything, all choices, all realities, all things that happen are woven together to create this giant web of occurrences of determined outcomes of reality that are, you know, somewhat out of your control. And the way that I describe it is not so much that, like, because, you know, predestination or predeterminism, whatever you want to describe it, which is the idea of, like, pre-Luther, you know, Christians, you know, mainly Protestants and stuff, and later got picked up by other Protestants, is that, you know, there's a deity that writes your fate. All souls are either, you know, sent to heaven or damned to hell before they're even born. Everything is all completely pre-written and everybody's just kind of acting out a play. You know, it's not like that at all. The way that I describe it is, Griff, you're my age. I'm sure you remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. You get to choose your own adventure, but it's all within, you know, within the book itself. You don't get to go outside of the book, but you get to choose a different path within the book.
I actually even remember that there were text-based games based on those.
Absolutely. They were great, too.
But anyway, like, what was I going to say? There was something related to that I wanted to touch on. Shit.
Sorry, I filibustered.
It's fine. No, what I did want to say was that this actually kind of touches where we were 10 minutes ago or so. But as I said, the idea of providence and so on, as you said, comes from Martin Luther and then John Calvin. We get the predestination, blah, blah. As I said, I think that it's basically a twisted form of our natural view that we have this need to see the world that way. And, you know, you can even, if you look back at, say, Beowulf, which is technically a source from Christian times in England, but this, you know, the natural Germanic view of fate runs through the entire thing. You know, you have statements like fate goes ever as it must, and it constantly mentions, I think the original old, you know, Anglo-Saxon word is metod or something, which is like the measurer, which, you know, later gets assigned to the Christian God, but originally is clearly a reference to one of the norms.
Yeah. Yeah. Press 9 in the chat if Griff should get a beard net. Yeah, so the Norns are absolutely 100%, you know, super important when understanding our concept of weird, our concept of time, our concept of, you know, fate. So it's like, you know, yes, you get to choose your own adventure, like I said earlier, but it's within the same book. It's like you get to choose doors 1 through 5. However, all of these hallways are within the same building. You don't get to go too far outside of the thing. Also, the way that I describe it is almost like a, what is it called, a rugby scrum. I'm sure everybody's, I watch American, you know, sports ball, so I don't really watch too much rugby. But, for, you know, one of the most popular aspects or, you know, pivotal aspects of rugby is the scrum, which is, the guys line up, they face each other, and then they hug, and then they get up and they smash into each other and they push and try to push each other around. Well, if you are the guy in the middle of the scrum, You get to stand up. You could try to turn another way. You could do it, but you have all of these other people pushing against you, going a certain direction. That is all the different webs, or the different strands within the web of weird. That is everybody else's decisions, everybody else's choices, everybody else's choose your own adventure woven into the entire patchwork, the weaving fabric of weird. And within that, you have your Orlog, which is kind of like your fate. And then you have and a lot of this stuff sort of. I have a Hindu friend, and he's a really brilliant guy. I'm gonna have him on again very soon, but. When he talks about, like, he's really big into understanding the Asatru stuff too. So when he talks about it, he's like, yeah, this is like different language to understand, like, our system of, like, karma and dharma and urta and, like, these things like that.
Well, I mean, I would say you even mentioned Urlog. I think it's even really a misunderstanding to take Urlog directly as, say, destiny. I think Urther from the Norse, or weird in the Old English, is really the closer word for destiny, at least to my mind and to my understanding. Urlog is really closer to what the Hindus or the Buddhists even would call dharma. And, as far as I'm aware, the only European language that preserved, we all have borrowings of dharma back now, but prior to the recontact with India from, the British Empire and everything, as far as I'm aware, the only European language that had a word that was cognate to it was Lithuanian, which is dharna.
And what does that mean in Lithuanian?
It's the same thing. It's harmony, basically. But as I was saying, I mean, to my mind, Urlog is basically our word in Germanic and Norse sources for dharma, harmony. I mean, if you just look at the word and the actual, break it down to its actual etymological roots to try and understand what it really means. You have two word elements. You have Ur and Lug. Well, Ur is the same Germanic element that basically means the primal, the first, the primeval of something. You could say Ur with a UR in German and basically put it in front of anything.
And Lug is law, right?
Yeah. Lug, I mean, the original meaning of the word is basically something you lay down. But it's the same root that, leads to even the word literally law. And, it comes to mean law. So basically we look at this word and it means it's the primary original law laid down at the start of the world.
Yeah. And, I find that so interesting. And it's actually a pretty, powerful thing when you think about it. If you ask somebody that's from a dharmic religion, what does dharma mean? They'll tell you dharma means truth. Dharma means truth. What is the highest ideal for us? It's truth. What is Urlog? What is the primal or the primordial law? The primordial law is the prime of all laws. Goes back to what is the root of all laws? Truth. The word for tree, it's cognate, is truth. Ask an embla. We're made from truth, essentially. So there's so much that goes back that ties both of those, the dharmic religions, which are, we all know, stem from, the steppe people, the original Aryan people, and they went to India and then they went up here, and we both have, we're essentially sister religions. So it's not surprising. However, it's really, really powerful stuff when you dig down in etymology. When I first started, like years ago, when I was like, oh, who cares about, etymology? Now it's like etymology, I think, is one of the most powerful tools that we have, because it really uncovers meanings, mysteries behind certain words and titles and definitions that we had no idea. And it's been one of our greatest ways of decoding what our ancestors left behind for us. And so it's really, really cool stuff.
No, there's really, exploring etymology and connections like that you can really go far down. Essentially, that's basically what Heidegger's philosophy was all about, for example, which is not on topic for tonight, but something we could discuss perhaps another night. But, as you said, that when you go into etymology and make these connections, you can find that words have primary, and even when you just use them today, those primary hidden deeper meanings are still kind of lurking behind the scenes. They're always there, just waiting to be exposed, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you look at, you know, determinism, obviously, Mr. Griff, I'm assuming that you have accepted determinism as, you know, as the leading philosophy for your worldview.
You mean it's, well, I would say, as you said, the existential determinism is basically where I'm at.
So how would you explain that to somebody that's really, really having trouble with free will, having giving up their idea that they actually don't have free will, that free will is an illusion? How would you tell them? Because, you know, the argument is, and I hear this a lot, it's like, well, if I don't have free will, if I can't decide what I want to do and I have a fate, then I might as well just kill myself. What do you say to those people?
Well, I think really the best way to explain it to someone directly is just to go into the fact that you're conditioned by everything that you are. You know, you're conditioned by being a white man or woman. You're conditioned by being whatever ethnicity you are within that. You're conditioned by where you grew up. You're conditioned by who you were schooled by. You're conditioned by who you knew. You're conditioned by your parents and stuff. To think that any action you have is independent of all of that is, well, it's frankly absurd if you really just sit down and think about it. Like, everything you do now is really conditioned by your path. Like, you can't just up and disconnect from your past. The idea that you're just some free-floating actor in a rational world is, it's completely unrooted in real experience. As you said, you know, it's not empirical. It's not, I mean, every day you walk around and live every moment of your life, you know, you look at something and think about it. It's going to be conditioned. Your response to it is going to be conditioned by specific memories or what your past experiences were with it. You know, I mean, for example, you meet a dog on the street. How you react to a dog is going to be whether you had a childhood dog or if you've had good experiences with dogs, or maybe you're afraid of dogs because a dog bit you when you were seven. Like,
and there's also ancestral memory as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's even another level. That's I mean, I definitely believe in it, but to try and explain to someone that is still in the, like, I'm a free actor, free will tier, that's, you start going into ancestral memory, they're probably going to think you're crazy and just tune out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really, there's been times that I just, like, sit and I just get lost thinking about that, just trying to, like, go through all the different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can do the same thing. You know, I sit there and I can get lost in personal memories or even very into ancestral memories. You know, I can do exactly the same thing. I can just sit there. I can, you know, picture myself six in some particular time and place, or I could just even think back to ancestral memories of places and things that I haven't personally experienced, but it's a vaguer sense of memory, but it's real.
So it's like, you know, if you, and it's just like, if you just apply logic to it, it's hard. Like I said earlier in the show, you know, if I pick up a rock and I throw it, that rock is going to have a determined trajectory, right?
So sure, that's I would say that if we want to talk about it from the perspective of the web of weird or existential determinism, you know, you chose which rock to throw, and that does affect it. You know, but each rock has a specific path it will follow based on what that rock is, you know, its mass, its shape, and whatever.
And we also know within physics that there's no such thing as random. There's no such thing as random. There's no such thing as infinite outcomes. There are like a limited amount of outcomes. We know that scientifically. It's a mathematical impossibility for there to be infinite outcomes.
Well, you know, people will use a cope for that. They'll talk about quantum physics and stuff, but yeah, quantum physics applies for the scale of atoms and subatomic particles and all that. But the idea that you can take that kind of probabilistic, non-causal thinking and apply it to the macro scale, there's no evidence for that. But people, you know, they base all kinds of things. You know, you get all kinds of New Age bullshit based on that too. But it doesn't, you know, it might be true on that scale, but it doesn't apply in the world we deal with day to day.
But even in quantum physics, it proves about limited outcomes. You know, they talk about electrons going around an atom. Like, what are those electrons really going around the atom? No, it's just like there's many, many atoms. It's just how often they appear. You know what I mean? I don't know how to really articulate it because I'm not really a big physics guy. But that itself proves limited outcomes. There are limited outcomes. It's scientifically proven. So if you know that just on a basic level, things are determined, you just do. Scientifically, there are limited outcomes. You know, so it's like, how can you deny all of that evidence and still think that you are a special little wonderful creature that decides everything and you're just free will and all this hippy dippy goofy stuff? No, you are a servant. You are confined to the laws of the cosmos. You are confined to your Orlog, to the Orlog, the primordial law. It's inescapable. So, moving on, this is a question that I get that kind of dumbfounds me. And it's, what is the utility of telling people that they have determinism? Because studies show, and I've read it, that people that believe in free will, like they did a study on students that believe that they have the control of their own destiny 100% perform better. So what is the utility of teaching people this if it possibly hurts their productivity or their confidence?
Well, it kind of connects to what I said about the fact that something like providence or predestination is basically a twisted form of our natural impulse to see the world as fatal, as guided by fate or Erlug, and that we all have limited control of things. But I think that fundamentally ties into our nature and our emotional state and stuff as Europeans. And I even think this ties into things like, say, the depression epidemic and why, say, what is it, something like 30% of American women are in antidepressants or something?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that comes from the fact that you're basically loading these people with a mentality and a worldview that doesn't match their nature. It doesn't match how they were built to see the world. You know, they have this idea that they can control everything. They're responsible for everything that has gone wrong in their lives. I mean, yeah, of course you're going to fucking feel depressed and want to drink or take opiates or antidepressants if you think that every bad thing that happened to yourself in your life was your fault and not that, well, you know, fate is kind of capricious and shitty, to say it right, bluntly.
Actually, for me, it's liberating.
I find it liberating as well. But again, from that same perspective that you, I mean, it's not that you're just apologizing away your mistakes or something, but, you know, all of us have had, I mean, even to go back to something like your example of the guy hitting a pothole and crashing and dying. Well, is that really his fault? Not exactly. And it's not to just apologize it away, but I think it's just a realistic take on the world.
Now,
but if you don't have that realistic take and you literally think that, okay, anything that bad that happened in my life, you know, I got sick or I lost this job, it must have been my fault. And you're going to walk around with that for, say, 30 years of that burden and guilt built up. I mean, again, to go back to the fact that it's a Protestant worldview, that, you know, the whole guilt thing is built into the Christian idea and stuff because, you know, you have the guilt and sin and then you have reconciliation and blah, 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 and sacraments, at least if you're Catholic or Orthodox. Various Protestant faiths have stripped parts of it away, but the fundamental fact remains that, you know, that whole idea of I'm responsible for anything that happened in my life because I'm a free agent in a world built by a benevolent God means that anything bad happened, yeah, it's your fault. So you bear it. And yeah, that's why we get things like an opiate epidemic, 20 or 30 or whatever percent it is of women on antidepressants and all this shit.
Yeah. All right, real quick, my boy Bruno had to leave. Hail to YouTube, Mr. Bruno. I love that guy. He's our He's our based Catholic friend, and I love him. He's a real, real great guy. He's all, you can catch me and him over there on the Goyfellas. So I had to give Mr. Bruno a shout. But here's why understanding the idea of fate was liberating for me. You know, and you're kind of alluding to this as well, that I started to understand that not everything was in my control. And when I understood that not everything was in my control, that I didn't feel as bad for things that went wrong. You know, I mean, I don't blame myself for everything. You know, and when you realize I'm just a man, I am just a
man. But like I was saying, you know, when you're in this free will Protestant Christian worldview mentality, you do blame yourself for everything. And it's an incredibly unhealthy way to be. As I said, I really do believe that things like the opiate crisis, you know, rampant alcoholism and the massive prescriptions for antidepressants and all that shit, I think it all is tied together to that.
Yeah, I agree too. It's like the bigger they are, the harder they fall. You know, the more that you believe that you are, you know, larger and have more in control, the more things that fall apart, the more you're going to hate yourself for it. You know what I mean? So it's like when you understand, when you take on the idea of fate, you're humbling yourself before the grand mechanics of the cosmos, and there's something very liberating in feeling humbled like that and to feel small.
But I think it's also just more accurate. I mean, you can even to dig into another controversial topic, since it's kind of what I do, on a macro scale, this mentality is what leads to ideas like the idea that climate change is completely caused by CO2 in humans. Like, it's not looking at the world and the universe in, hey, we're small actors and there's a lot of complex shit going on and there are bigger forces than us to drive this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
I mean, it's it might seem unrelated to the concept of fate, the title.
It's not.
Exactly. Like, all this stuff connects. Like, when you look at the world from a connected, healthy view, as we were saying last week, you know, everything is connected in different levels of, say, the same thing. I mean, one could say it's somewhat of a monist worldview, I guess, but not the like weird strict one of, say, like a Gnostic or something, but you know, it's, as you say, it's all this web of weird that things like the climate and stuff are a broad interconnected web of causes and fate and great forces that act on things. And it's, you know, ironically, massive thing of human free will and hubris to think that, yeah, okay, it's humans burning fossil fuels, making CO2. That's what changes the climate, period. Like, that is a real extreme macrocosm view of free will, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, also, you know, with climate change, the science doesn't back up their guilt trip. Because it's like, when you instill free will, what you're doing is you're instilling a like self-policing, self-guilt system, like an already pre-installed system of you know, essentially masochism, of moral, emotional masochism. You punish yourself for things that, you know, you shouldn't punish yourself for. Look, okay, so do we produce too much crap? Do we dump stuff? Yes. You know, should we? No, not at all. Is China a monster when it comes to poisoning the planet? 100%. But the bottom line is the climate changes because the climate changes. We know it's all because of, you know, glacial maximums. We know it's because of sunspots, you know, solar minimums, solar maximums. It's just the process of the Earth is cyclical.
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, this isn't even a subject that you and I have talked about before, but we're exactly on the same page with it because both of you and I have a healthy, holistic worldview, and we've stopped having this idea that we're free will and that humans drive things with their own intentions and actions, and we see things as a greater system where there are massive forces at work, both on a physical level, a metaphysical level, a spiritual level, And it all comes together to actually see the world as it is and stop living this lie based on basically the lies we were loaded with growing up in a, you know, Protestant or secular rationalist worldview, you know, that we're programmed with this worldview and these ideas. And, but it's wrong. It doesn't match reality. As you say, we need to be empirical and look at things. You know, how does our idea of things match what we see day to day? And as you say, everything that about the climate, but everything also about just day to day life. You know, there are greater forces acting and we need to respond to it. We don't need to be, you know, we don't need to be pure determinists in the, you know, kind of predestination school of, okay, we're along for the ride, but we need to face the world as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, what is our dharma or erlog? Truth. You know, you got to pursue truth. Yeah. You know, I see a lot of people in the chat are kind of discussing. So, press one if you believe in free will. Press two if you are like me and Griff and you believe in fate. I want to see. I want to take a little survey here. But also real quick, I want to show you guys something here in the audience. This is really, really cool. I want to share this with you before I forget. My boys at Neurona Society, which I'm now the promotions coordinator for, produced this. And I've been meaning to bring it on air just to show you guys this because of what a cool thing this is. Mr. Mark Pereira and the Neurona Society created this. It's called the Runic Edda. It is the Also True Edda produced. It's like, leather bound. It's got all these nice little things on it. And it's completely in Elder Futhark. It's got art on the page. I'm going to be very careful because it's like a really nice book. See if you can see it here. Very, very cool. Very cool piece of work here. I'm going to show you guys some of the artwork real quick, and we'll get back to what we're talking about. It's really, really cool. Family relic. Very cool. That's a family Bible. The Runic Edda. Yeah, Neurona Society. I'm not sure if he's doing another run, if he's going to make more. Or when I bought this, it was only 12 of these in the entire world. So I don't know if he did a second run or if he's going to do a third run, or I'm not sure what's available. I just wanted to show that with you guys because I really, really love this thing. It's really beautiful, and you know, I can't wait to pass it off to my kids and stuff like that.
But to be a family Bible or an equivalent, does it have a spot in the front to write your family tree?
It does not. It does not.
Maybe he can do that for the next run.
Yeah, that would be pretty. That'd be pretty cool because it's kind of like
Well, you know, like you say, it's. I mean, I have my disagreements with Neurona that we can talk about another day, but it's obviously a well-done work, well-crafted, really an heirloom item. But, you know, in that function, it'd be pretty cool to also be able to write in, you know, family tree stuff. That is one thing the Protestants got right, I will say.
Yeah. And you know what? It's okay to... reclaim or rediscover or reinvent current traditions. I think it's okay. It's all right. But so we're coming up on an hour, actually, Mr. Griff. That was, you know, really cool.
It flew by. I wasn't sure we'd be able to fill an hour with this talk. But
well, it's such a vast topic and it's so interesting.
It is a vast topic. I just, you know,
yeah. Huh. And I think it's really important to talk about as well. I think it's...
Well, as I said when we started, I think that it's fundamentally a difference in how our ancestors saw the world and how we're raised to and programmed with viewing things.
You're right. It's fundamental to a proper Odinic or folkish worldview.
I will actually recommend a specific book on this topic for anyone who's listening. It's called The Love of Destiny by Dan McCoy. It's only like 70 pages or so, and it really will do well to reorient your worldview, I think, if you don't understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's definitely something to ponder on. It's something, as I mentioned and Mr. Griff mentioned, it really is truly liberating when you get rid of that free will crap and you accept, you know, the view of our ancestors, how our ancestors viewed time. That's really what they were doing. They were viewing time and how past, present, and future are all woven together. They exist simultaneously. How we perceive things, how we interact with time, and how we interact with fate, and
Well, I think it even just talks, even just speaks to how you see yourself in the world, in time and space. You know, that it's healthier to see it accurately instead of having this rationalist, even egoistic view that, individual humans are the agency that drives the universe. I mean, that's completely inverse of reality.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So everybody's listening. This isn't going to be, if this is the first time you're hearing this conversation, you're thinking about these ideas, don't have an aversion. This is a really important part of the folkish worldview. It's, it's something that our ancestors, it was a very real part of their lives and a very real part of their spiritual understanding. And, I think this is, it's just something that everybody should do more. Man, I've never done research, and I feel like
no. And as I said, even if you look at, sources from the early Christian times, you still see this. It permeates the sources. Beowulf is the most obvious one, but you can find plenty of other ones where they live this worldview, whether they worship our native gods or even they throw Christ into the pantheon or replace the pantheon. But it's so vital to the worldview that it didn't even die out for more centuries on from conversion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really fascinating topic, and it's something that I suggest everybody delves into. Really explore these ideas and these philosophies, and just explore them for yourselves. Don't just listen to us. Go do your reading. Check out that book that Mr. Griff. Griff, what was it called again?
It's called The Love of Destiny. The author is Dan McCoy. It's funny because he actually he kind of cucked on some of the things he said in this book later because he might have figured out the conclusions they led to. He's not exactly one of us, but it's a really great book. I even sit down and reread it a couple times a year just because it really grounds me and recenters my worldview. It's a really great work.
I'll have to check it out. I'll have to check it out because that sounds really cool. So, yeah, everybody, check that out. And we are coming up. We got 5 minutes left. Mr. Griff, would you like to have any – do you have a closing statement for us?
I mean, I've kind of been orbiting around making it. But as I said, it's – the concept of fate or fatalism or determinism, all of these things, they're not clear to most people nowadays. And we're raised in this – idea of a rationalist linear causality world. We're not raised to see things truly as a complex web of weird, and things are complex, and we're just a minor actor within that. And there are the Norns weaving it, but all of it's just a healthier worldview. It's more accurate, and as I also said before, that it's just a worldview that is healthier for what we're evolved to or made to, we're built to see the world this way. And once you actually load your brain with the right thinking that we were built to think with, instead of foreign ideas, foreign religions, enlightenment ideas, you just, every day is easier.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And moreover, it's also a scientific view. A scientific view.
I wouldn't even call it a scientific view. I would say that it's compatible with the science, but it's so much more than scientific.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. So, I love that. I think that was a perfect note to close out on. But before we go, one more quick shout to my homegirl, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Stop using the crap. Stop using the synthetics. Stop using the plastic. Stop using the alcohol, the chemicals, the garbage. Stop giving your money to people that hate your guts. Man, we got to get, our ancestors gifted us with such beautiful, beautiful complexions, beautiful bodies. We're beautiful people because that was a gift from our ancestors. We owe it to them and we owe it to ourselves to be maximum handsome, maximum beautiful. I guarantee your wife or your girlfriend, your mom is going to love it, absolutely love it. Like I said earlier, my boy Dr. G, Yeah, there was on a couple of episodes ago. He got it for him and his wife, and they love it. And he's a doctor. He's a real life doctor. So real life, it's doctor approved. I can say that, right? That's pretty cool. So doctor approved, and more importantly, Dave approved. So keep your white bright. Keep your beard robust and keep your mane flowing, just like Big Dave and Dr. G. Go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Real organic stuff for us, by us. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. And one more shout to my boy. If you want a really badass custom drinking horn, check out my boy Rob Stam. I don't know if he has a website yet. He didn't send me where he's at, but you can find him on Facebook. Rob Stam, STAMM. He's the Folkish Cop. He also has a YouTube channel. He was that guy that SPLC, I think it was SPL or ADL or Antifa, one of these scumbag organizations, got the guy fired for being Folkish. He's a military veteran, a war hero. He's like a just awesome father. He was a awesome cop, and they got him fired just for practicing our religion. So at least go check the guy out and show him some love. Give him a shout. Tell him Dave sent you. And if you are in the market for a really badass custom horn, I'm telling you, look at this bad boy. I can't wait to fire this up. I can't wait. I'm gonna break it in at midsummer during our bloat midsummer. So I can't wait for that. So yeah, really, really great, awesome, reasonable prices. Really good stuff. He even does small horns, big horns, whatever you want. He'll do whatever you want. So check him out. Give him a shout. Tell him I sent you. All that good stuff. He's not paying me, by the way. I just gave him a shout because he's my boy, and I love his products. So, yeah, anyway, that's going to be it for the blog this evening, guys. Like, subscribe, share here. Hrof and Volk Network. So much awesome stuff. We're evolving. We're growing. We're over 1,000 subscribers right now. 1,000 subscribers. Can you believe that? We got so many awesome. Rory's here. Hen House is here. You got to check out, who else is over here? Oh, yeah. How could I forget? Mr. McNallen with God's Folk and Destiny that, you know, I'm producing for him. And once in a while, I pop in and co-host. So go check that out. God's Folk and Destiny. They had an episode yesterday. It was really great. What is it? The Folkstead with Rory and Sig. They talk about permaculture and like, you know, homesteading and growing plants and aquaponics. And what an awesome show. If you want to learn that kind of stuff, you want to learn like real rad trad traditionalism kind of stuff. Yeah, my man Rory is the king. But if you want to check out some really good stuff for the ladies, by the ladies, go give my girl Mother Hen a shout. I love that lady. What a wonderful, wonderful lady. And her show is really, really good, The Hen House. So go check that out. Man, we got so much awesome stuff coming your way. You won't even believe. We got, you know, more shows, more content, more great stuff. We're evolving. We're growing. We're better than ever. And we're going to keep getting better and keep getting stronger as we grow and you guys grow with us. And before we go, I want to give all you guys in the audience, you know, just a big shout out, a big hail, and, you know, many blessings from the bottom of my heart. Man, I love you guys. And, you know, many blessings to you guys and your wonderful, beautiful families. I'll see you guys next week on the Bog. I'm not sure what we're doing yet, but it's going to be awesome. I trust me. I know.
It will always be awesome.
Always awesome. All right, folks, take care. Hail.